the government's Cash for Clunkers program, where car owners can get up to $4,500 for trading in their old cars for new, more fuel-efficient ones, has turned out to be more popular than General Motors. So many people have taken advantage of it, the program almost ran out of cash just a week after it was launched. And yesterday, the House voted to pump $2 billion in emergency funds into the program. That money would come from the economic stimulus package. Senate's expected to take up the measure next week. Our friend NPR News analyst Juan Williams joins us. Morning, Juan.
Good morning, Skip.
And this is being seen, obviously, as a very successful program. People have been flocking to dealerships, trade in their cars. But another $2 billion had to be spent, come from the U.S. Treasury very quickly. So was there a cost for this kind of success?
Well, actually, the money was already exists. As you say, the money was there as part of the stimulus package. This literally comes out of the Energy Department Loan Fund. But the idea there was, of course, to stimulate the economy. And if you're talking about short-term stimulus, wow, this looks like a wild, wild success. So on that level, you can't beat it, but the problem is it's got to also be approved by the Senate next week. Mm-hmm. And there you see senators already talking about tightening those fuel economy standards. So they may change the terms of the deal going forward. But for right now, over the weekend, the White House says go out and buy a car. And the car dealers are saying, come on in.
Well, what does it mean that you have a government program with projected costs and they underestimated the projected costs?
Right. They didn't understand how popular the program would be. Car dealers could have made the offer to you, Scott Simon, as early as like July 4th weekend.
Yeah.
But
if I had a driver's license, they could they could make that offer to me. Yeah.
Well, they could give you the scooter. They could give you
a scooter. Actually, if I have nothing to trade in for $4,500. But I take your point. Go ahead. Yeah.
But now they actually have started applying for the government money. The rebates coming from the government and the application process is slow. And so that creates a problem. And, of course, much of this is attached to the whole notion of consumer confidence. You just heard John Yiste talking about the economy looking it's recovering. The slowest part of the recovery so far is that consumers aren't spending because more people are saving, thinking we're not sure about where this is going, anxiety over holding on to a job, paying big bills. So this is actually good news. But as you say, it does make you think, does the government know what they're doing?
And political question. I got emails yesterday saying, how come cars, not refrigerators, not washer dryers, not lawnmowers? What's the special clout that the car industry has?
Well, it's good to have a lot of senators who care about the car industry and all of the subsidiaries, you know, that attach to it, that feed into the car industry and feed into the making of a car. And cars, of course, fire up jobs. And so what that means is that people who care about jobs say, I'd rather spend that money on the car industry than, let's say, cash for couches or cash for anything else around, you know. No, I'll spend it on cash for cars.
President's approval rating is now normal. It's at 54%, down from 61% in mid-June, according to the latest Pew Research poll. Still, certainly more popular than Congress. Help us understand how the president's approval rating might have some influence over what they have to do over the next few weeks.
Oh, it has big influence because basically when you look at something like health care, what you see is the American people have lots of questions about health care, particularly about whether it will personally benefit them. But they also have trust in President Obama. And certainly more trust in him than in Republicans when it comes to dealing with health care or the economy. So even as you see declines in the president's numbers, people are saying it's really about whether or not President Obama backs this position and says to me that it will work. If his numbers are going down and his policies, I say, people aren't sure about him, then there's almost no chance that health care reform will take place. It really rides on his very high approval ratings and confidence in him as an individual. In fact, you know, it's interesting to note, since he took office, this is the first time that the right track, wrong track numbers, something that political strategists pay a lot of attention to, are about equal. Ever since he's been elected, people thought, you know, things are getting better. Mm-hmm. Now they're not quite so sure. That's a big turn for him.
Okay. Thanks very much.
You're welcome, Scott.
NPR News Analyst Juan Williams.
So far this year, there have been nearly 30 congressional hearings on financial regulatory reform, a lot of talk and not a lot of action. The White House issued its own overhaul plan back in June. Central to it, the Federal Reserve would be the primary overseer of financial risk. There are lots of critics of that, including the smaller regulatory agencies that would lose power or even cease to exist. The administration is trying to rein in those dissenters, but so far, unsuccessfully. NPR's Yuki Noguchi reports.
The same people sitting before the Senate Committee on Banking, Housing, and Urban Affairs had days earlier been summoned to the Washington equivalent of the principal's office. On Friday, Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner unleashed an expletive-laced tirade on the country's top financial regulators. According to the Wall Street Journal, he was angry that their disagreement with some aspects of the financial overhaul could possibly derail reform efforts altogether. For Republicans, this bit of news was like red meat. Senator Bob Corker of Tennessee asked the panel to verify the newspaper's report.
Generally speaking, did it capture the essence of the attitude in the meeting?
FDIC Chair Sheila Bair demurred, leaving John Dugan, the comptroller of the currency, to shift uncomfortably in his seat.
Senator, it was a candid conversation about institutions. I mean, our agency's different views on the different subjects.
It was a generally fair article.
A lot of it was true.
Okay.
If Geithner hoped his lecture would quell dissent, it didn't turn out that way. Regulators reiterated their misgivings with the administration's plan. Bair, who heads the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, told the committee she supports much of the administration's plan, including the creation of a body to regulate consumer financial products. But she said consolidating regulation under the Fed comes with its own risks.
I think if you have a single monopoly regulator, that can contribute to regulatory laxity as opposed to having competition among regulators.
Bair's assessment runs directly counter to one of the administration's main points. It argues that by strengthening the Fed's ability to oversee all risk in the financial system, that could help shut down loopholes that help some financial institutions escape regulatory scrutiny. But given that that plan would take power away from some of the smaller agencies, Montana Democrat John Tester noted that Bair and Dugan might be on the defensive.
Taking off your hat as your individual department leaders, because I know turf does play a role. I mean, if somebody said, I'm going to dissolve your farm, I'd be a little upset with it. But just tell me how we can get these gaps closed without doing something like this and why this wouldn't be a good idea.
On this count, the panelists appeared to find agreement. You need uniform standards so banks cannot go shopping for the most lenient regulation. Daniel Tarullo is on the board of governors of the Federal Reserve. He also said today's economy is global and far-reaching, so ensuring financial stability across the system would require a supervisor over the major institutions. Ranking Member Richard Shelby from Alabama, among others, pointed out that the Fed already had much of that authority, even before last year's financial crisis. It simply failed to employ it. Tarullo, a newcomer to the Fed, didn't deny this.
I really do believe there's plenty of blame to go around everywhere, but I don't honestly think that all roads lead to the Fed on this. I mean, Bear Stearns...
Well, which don't lead to the...
Tarullo said there are many places that failed, and that is why the Fed and everyone else needs to change. Yuki Noguchi, NPR News, Washington.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. Good morning. Renee Montaigne is in Afghanistan. I'm Steve Inskeep.
And I'm Linda Wertheimer. The global financial storm that has swept away millions of jobs and destroyed trillions of dollars in wealth has also brought calls for economic reform. The crisis originated in the United States, the result of careless lending, exotic financial products, and lax regulation.
So today we have another installment of our series, The Future of Capitalism. NPR's John Itzde examines whether the freewheeling capitalism practiced in the U.S. will become more like that in continental Europe, where the state plays a larger role.
Dan Juergen chronicled the global expansion of capitalism in a book and TV series titled The Commanding Heights. He says confidence in that system has been shaken by the financial crisis.
We have not seen this kind of debate about the future of capitalism and market economies since the collapse of communism at the beginning of the 1990s.
While the U.S. style of lightly regulated dynamic capitalism has been ascendant since then, Juergen says the pendulum is swinging back toward a European model with more government involvement in the economy. Just look at President Obama's agenda, he says, and you see government being very assertive.
You know, Washington, D.C. is not only the political capital of the United States, it's now the financial capital, it's the auto capital, it's the energy capital, it's the health capital of the United States. And so I think people recognize that the game is here in Washington.
I don't want to run auto companies. I don't want to run banks.
President Obama has made it clear, though, that he sees much of the recent government involvement in the economy as temporary.
I refuse to let these companies become permanent wards of the state, kept afloat on an endless supply of taxpayer money.
Princeton professor and former Federal Reserve Vice Chairman Alan Blinder takes the president at his word. He believes Mr. Obama really doesn't want the government to run companies like GM and Citigroup.
It's in some real sense un-American. It's not the way we do things in the United States. You know, this really isn't France, as you can tell by sampling the food. So I'm not so worried about that. It's definitionally true. We now have in America a bigger socialist sector, if you want to call it that, than we've had in a very long time, maybe ever. But the government definitely wants to get out of these businesses.
In the end, Blinder thinks it's doubtful that the U.S. will move very far in the direction of the European economic model. Barry Eichengreen of the University of California, Berkeley, agrees. But he thinks the current financial crisis suggests the U.S. needs to be more open to other ideas.
The United States has no monopoly on how best to organize a market economy.
Eichengreen, who recently published a book on European economies, says the Europeans obviously do things differently, with a larger role for government, more regulation, and a more generous social safety net that provides workers greater security.
And yet they have been able to grow in terms of living standards as successfully as we have for the last 15 or 20 years.
So what would it mean for Americans if the U.S. economy became more like Europe's, especially with a bigger social safety net? Well, Allegra Milan has experienced the difference. She grew up in New York, but fell in love with a German student.
We met in New York and had a brief courtship.
Allegra followed her boyfriend, Florian Dussler, back to Germany. They settled in Dusseldorf, where Allegra got a job teaching at an international school.
Now we have a baby, yes. Yes, as they say in Germany, we got a baby.
He has these big cheeks and he has this really big chubby legs that I used to have as a baby as well.
His name is Adrian and he is just 5 months old.
Allegra found having a baby in Germany quite different from what she'd observed in the U.S. First of all, her public health plan paid virtually all the cost, including the cost of a midwife who helped prepare her for Adrian's birth and then visited her at home for 7 weeks afterward.
When she'd come, she'd check on my healing from the pregnancy, from the delivery. She'd check Adrian's weight, check how he was growing, and just talk with me. And so I felt very, very supported as a new mother here, whereas I don't think I would have had the same kind of support in the U.S.
Florian, who works for a software company, says there's something else the government provides that Americans might find even more surprising.
We get a so-called payment for Adrian called Kindergeld, which is child money, literally translated. It's 164 euros per month.
And on top of that, Allegra gets about two-thirds of her annual teacher's salary for a full year after Adrian's birth.
It's wonderful. You know, it takes a lot of pressure off of the decision to stay home and makes it, you know, being home really a pleasure when the baby's up.
Of course, the price for these social supports and other benefits like free college education and generous unemployment payments is steep.
Almost half of my salary goes to my, you know, combined taxes, including the contribution I make to my health, my health care.
And even with taxes at that level, the generous benefits are becoming unsustainable. As the German population ages, there aren't enough workers to pay taxes into the system. That's partly why Germany is subsidizing childbirth. The country needs more babies like Adrian, who will grow up to be workers. While Allegra and Florian appreciate the security and support provided by the European model and think it's worth the taxes they pay, they also think it has some problems. Florian says he wishes the German economy were more dynamic.
It needs to be easier to found your company. It needs to be easier to employ people. Many companies don't exist in Germany because you have so harsh employment rules.
Kevin Hassett agrees. He's an economist at the American Enterprise Institute, a conservative Washington think tank. And he says that actually many European governments have been loosening their grip on their economies during the past couple of decades.
They've moved much more towards having an economy that looks like an American or traditionally American economy.
Hassett believes that will continue. But as a result of the financial crisis, he also sees the United States moving in Europe's direction and the two models converging.
I'm not saying that that's what I would do if I were a dictator, but I think that it's clear that that's the path that seems to be emerging.
Hassett is right. Europe has been moving toward the U.S. model in some areas, says Ken Rogoff, a former chief economist at the IMF. But now Rogoff says the big shift will come in America.
I think the United States is clearly going through a sea change to become more like Europe.
But Rogoff, now a Harvard professor, warns that Americans need to understand there will be consequences. He says a move toward European-style capitalism with its more generous social safety net and tighter regulation will mean higher taxes, and not just for the wealthy.
Certainly the administration and the Democrats talk about raising all the money from the wealthy, but I think empirical evidence shows that that's not likely to begin to pay for everything, and the tax hikes are going to have to be much broader.
Given what the administration is contemplating on health care, the environment, and other initiatives, Rogoff estimates taxes could rise by 25% to 50%. And he argues there's no question that higher taxes would slow U.S. growth and raise unemployment closer to European levels. While Rogoff says he might personally tolerate that in exchange for the European-style social benefits, it's not clear that most Americans would. John Idsty, NPR News, Washington.
From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Madeline Brand.
And I'm Robert Siegel. First this hour, the rush to save the Cash for Clunkers program. That's the government initiative that offers rebates to people who trade in old cars for new, more fuel-efficient ones. This small fraction of the huge stimulus package has proved wildly successful, so successful that it has run out of money. It was supposed to last into November.
In a moment, we'll ask how much the program has helped new car sales. First, as NPR's Adam Hochberg reports, today the House raced to pass legislation to keep the program afloat, at least for now.
Washington leaders spent the day scrambling to preserve a government stimulus program that appears to have been working too well. The $1 billion Congress originally put in the program was intended to last into the fall. But so many drivers have taken advantage of the rebate that funding is close to being depleted after being in effect just 5 days. Today, President Obama expressed confidence the program will go on.
We're now working with Congress on a bipartisan solution to ensure that the program can continue for everyone out there who's still looking to make a trade. And I'm encouraged that Republicans and Democrats in the House are working to pass legislation today that would use some Recovery Act funding to keep this program going.
The legislation, which the House later approved easily, injects an additional $2 billion into the Clunker program. If the Senate passes the bill next week, consumers would continue to be eligible for rebates up to $4,500 if they buy new cars and trade in certain older ones. During today's House debate, California Republican John Campbell said the program has already led to the sale of about 250,000 vehicles.
That is clearing inventories in car dealerships, which means car dealers will be ordering more cars. When they order more cars, plants will open up, they will be producing more cars, and people will go back to work. It is the one thing that we have done here in this Congress that is absolutely working. It is creating jobs, and we want it to create more.
Indeed, many car dealers report the program has caused an unexpectedly robust sales surge. At Fred Anderson Toyota in Raleigh, North Carolina, sales manager Sammy Hatley walked through the showroom this morning, pointing out customers who wanted to cash in.
They've got a clunker. The people that were sitting here, they probably, I'm not sure where they are, they got a clunker. We've got a busy place.
So busy that Hatley says his inventory is now at a 5-year low, and he's having trouble keeping Priuses, Corollas, and other vehicles in stock. While Hatley originally anticipated he might sell about 15 more cars because of the program, he says the actual number of clunker trade-ins has been much higher.
We've been so busy, you can't sit down and do the calculations, but I will say we've done over 100 of them since the program started. And I would say probably 50 of those may not have bought a car if the program hadn't have been here.
Among the customers hoping to take advantage of it today was retired cattle farmer Kathy Bobbitt. She drove to the dealership in an old Ford Explorer and was listening to a sales pitch about a Toyota Corolla.
You know the Corolla does have a pump-action handle, though, right?
Yeah, but there's still something about the way, the shape of that
dash.
Okay. Bobbitt says the trade-in value for the Explorer is about $2,000, but the government rebate means she can get back more than double that. Enough of an incentive that she and her husband decided to make a deal today.
We had started kind of thinking about, it's about time for another vehicle and what do we want to do. So, this kind of is a little extra incentive to go ahead and do it.
At this dealership, salespeople are continuing to offer cash for clunkers deals, even though the government funding may not be certain until the Senate acts. Sammy Hatley, the sales manager, says the cars will be held for customers and they'll get their money back if for some reason Washington fails to prolong the program. Adam Hochberg, NPR News, Chapel Hill, North Carolina.